can go ahead then and call the regular Finance Committee meeting to order for June 1. Comments from the public, are there any? I see no public on the
good point.
Other than Gail. And move on to item 3, hearing no public comments. Monthly updates, is that Paula or Tom?
That would be me.
Okay.
So good morning, everyone. Wanted to just provide some quick updates on some actions that we've been taking here. Standard monthly reporting, we had reported in the May board meeting that we had run into some issues with our journal entries. And it looks like we will have all of those April and May journal entries will be completed by the time we reach our June 16th meeting. And we'll have new budget reports that will be a little bit more transparent. We'll show the specific percentage of budget used, and we'll be removing two columns that didn't really make much sense in the presentation of the budget to actuals. So the intent is to provide a clear picture for the district and its residents for operational expenditures and revenues, and where we're trending as far as budgeting, if we're appropriately budgeting, we're appropriately expending, and where our revenues are tracking. The Reserve Special Board meeting for June 3rd at 2 o'clock, we have been working with Association.
Yes,
June 3rd at 2 o'clock. We've been working with Association Reserves to complete the reserve study. We'll have updates to the reserve policy, present findings from the consultant on the reserve analysis, and discuss current and future capital improvement projects. The contract for ERP, we've contracted with the Deloitte Government Inc. They are a small consulting firm. They have over 25 years experience in information technology services. They have successfully negotiated several ERP contracts with other agencies and districts and municipalities, and have been quite successful with those contract negotiations. And they will more than likely be using, we will be entering into a contract with one of the vendors that they probably entered in with before with other districts or agencies. Following that, recruitment, some numbers have changed. We did have an overwhelming response to the office technician posting. Those applications still keep coming in. And at the time that this was written, the district only received 2 applications for the accounting manager. I believe we're up to 5 now. And then I believe we're up to 5 or 6 for the accountant. I need to double check that as well. So we're hopeful that with the increased exposure and recruitment job boards and the classification changes and the increased salaries, that we'll bring in qualified staff that will fill significant gaps that we're experiencing in the administration department. So one of the things that we had kind of kicked around, and this will be a discussion for much, much later date, is removing the mandatory district application requirement, as it creates an additional barrier for applicants looking to apply. Most of the job boards that we post to have a built-in job application form, as well as places to upload your education, your certifications, your resume, your cover letter, and so on and so forth. So we want to make sure that adding an additional handwritten application form is not creating an additional barrier for qualified applicants looking to apply. So for that is all of the monthly updates that I have at this point. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, Paul, I have a couple. On the proposed changes to the reports, is the plan to bring those to us at the next meeting before we introduce them at the board meeting, or are you gonna try and roll those in to this month?
What would you prefer?
I don't know specifically, other than wondering what the layout looked like and how big they were and how they compare to what we do now.
So compared to what they do now, right now we are currently portraying the monthly budget total, which would be the 1/12th entry. And then the transaction at a 1/12th level, if this makes any sense. And then we show the annual budget, and then we show the year-to-date expenses. And I believe there's another column in there that really doesn't have any impact on it. What the new format will look like is it is just showing what your annual budget is, what your year-to-date expenses are, and what the percentage of budget used. So we're not looking at what the actual monthly is, because those 1/12 entries don't really make sense. Typically with operating expenses, you're going to see bulk. You know, the only time you would typically use a 1/12 entry is when you have a standard, we're paying a contract annually, and you're going to spend $12,000 each month against that contract cost. But typically for the majority of the expenses, and I probably want to say maybe 95% of the expense accounts, you're not going to see that type of transaction. You're going to see fluctuations. You're going to see, you know, with chemicals, for example, you're going to see no expenses in the first quarter, but then the second quarter, you might see a $200,000 charge. That's probably inflating it, but a $200,000 charge for chemicals, that is going to be for the entire fiscal year. So when you're looking at it in terms of on a monthly 1/12 entry, it kind of skews the information and doesn't really reflect what's actually happening. So it's really more of a streamlined report that really shows the activities as they're happening and the percentage of budget used, where we are in relation to the fiscal year.
Yeah, and John, this is Tom. I want to chime in quickly. I asked Paula to like re-engineer our monthly reports. You know, she's a fresh set of eyes. She comes from a different environment. And I basically gave her sort of carte blanche to just reimagine the reports and build them up from scratch. So it definitely is going to be a work in progress. But to answer your question, I'll rely on Paula. When do you want to have it ready?
I've been working with Sheila to have these completed. They should be almost done. So we could do the next board meeting June 16th, or we can save it for August July, if that works better for the finance committee meeting.
Would you rather see it at the finance committee, John? I guess that's
I'm not as concerned about checking the work. My concern would be that if we introduce reinvent the wheel, which is fine, that we, you know, I mean, we're running now 3 to 4 hours. Is this something you anticipate that we would have a bunch of questions at the board meeting? I mean, what I'm trying to do is, you know, streamline it to where we're, you know, where we're not going to take 20 or 25 minutes to go through this.
No,
at
actually,
a board meeting. Okay.
Sorry. No, actually, this is in an effort to streamline it. So what you're going to see is you're going to see the monthly budget actuals. It's really going to be just a discussion topic, and it will be as an attachment. So there will be a summary sheet that will give you the high level information for each one of the funds. And then you're going to have all of the supporting documentation as backup for each fund with all of the individual accounts, just like you would normally see, but it's in a more streamlined format. So you don't see all of this excess information that really isn't relevant to the operations.
Okay. Marty, do you have any?
Yeah, if we invest in a new software, will this monthly reporting change?
It can, absolutely.
Yeah, the plan is to buy software that has built-in reports, and that way, you know, we aren't reinventing reports on the fly all the time. We're just taking the standard output and spending our time making sure the transactions are being recorded correctly.
Well, I'd assume that you would get any system we'd be looking at would have some kind of a report writer function in it, right? That would let us do what we want.
And a lot of these systems have, I would probably say, a good 50 canned reports that you could use. You could also customize those reports within the system. You can modify the canned reports to determine what type of information you want to display. So there's multiple different ways of displaying the same information. So you can absolutely, we can keep it the way it is and just display the information with a different format based on, you know, the systems template, or we can, what we're currently doing is put it in Excel, which is actually quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
So we prefer to use the canned reports because that's directly from the system.
Okay. Well, then I'm flexible here. If you want to introduce it and briefly explain it at the meeting this month, that's okay. Or if you want to use the old reports and use it as a discussion item to introduce it, that's okay. As long as we're not, you know, chewing up whole blocks of time to get through it at a board meeting when we could probably see it and approve something at a future committee meeting. Whatever you think you want to do. I just had a question more than a preference.
You know, John, ideally we pull the reports out of the system, we publish them on Thursday before the next Wednesday board meeting, and we hit the item and said the reports have been filed, are there any questions? And then pending no questions, we move on to the next subject. So ideally the new system allows us to get reports out on time and puts us in a format where people can have read them over the weekend, you know, in the 4 or 5 days ahead of time. So when the board meeting hits, if there's a question, we answer the question. We just say, here's the report, any questions, answer the questions, move on. That's the goal.
Okay. So for this particular upcoming meeting, precisely what do you want to do?
Well, if we're prepared, we'll throw out the new report. If we're not prepared, we won't. We'll bring it to the Finance Committee.
Okay.
We got a lot of things going on right now with the reserve study and the town hall meeting and stuff. I just don't want to. I'm over promising, and I got to.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Marty, is that okay?
My previous question was thinking that this is going to be short-lived anyway, because we're going to be introducing a new software and we're going to have to make a choice with that one. So my other question is, what's the schedule with the consultant for the ERPs?
Well, right now they're finishing up the RFP, and we're hoping to have the RFP for the finance system on the street before the end of the month.
So they're helping you with an RFP?
Yeah, they're building the RFP. They're building the business rules. This is what we're paying them to do. They're building the business rules. They're putting it out in a format that is customary for the software vendors to respond. And then they're also building in, you know, the options that we want to look at. We're going to look at the possibilities of what modules that we purchased in a as much as an all-in-one system as possible. A lot of these companies have utility billing systems as part of their offerings. Whether we change utility billing system processes is something we have to decide as the presentations are made for to answer the request for a proposal.
So what's the
are you anticipating that this is going to come in below your limit?
Yes, it did. No, we've issued the contract. I followed the direction of the board from the board meeting.
Okay.
And we've issued a contract, and they're busily at work trying to get it finaled and publish it, so we can give the vendors an opportunity to go to our website, pull down the RFP and reply to it. So the RFP should be on the website within the next couple weeks, fair?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay, hello. Good. Well, then that was the concern, was we didn't want to waste any time with this. We wanted to move as quickly as we could.
We totally agree, and that's our objective right now. So hopefully we'll have a nice update by the board meeting.
How long are you giving the vendors to respond?
Generally, you give them about 45 days for this type of a project. And then, you know, by the time we publish the RFP, we'll have a timeline, and hopefully we can produce that at the next board meeting. It should have dates of, you know, when project kickoff is going to begin. And then the vendors are pretty good about dictating how much time they need to turn on, like, HR payroll, to turn on general ledger and the balance sheets accounts. And then you follow up with asset management, project management, you know, if we're going to do, if we're going to go to their system for payroll, what kind of a simultaneous payrolls do you do as you make sure the systems are correctly paying people? Then there's also the fixed asset, there's, you know, fixed asset modules. Some of these things have, some of these systems have a process, has a work, oh, I lost the term.
Workflow?
Not workflow, but a maintenance management system. So we put all of our fixed assets in the system, and the system tells us when do we need to be going to make sure that there's gas in the tank when the generator starts up and such as that. So we hope to know a lot more about this by the board meeting, Martin, but definitely by the finance committee in July, we'll know a lot more.
Okay.
One more question, if I could, on the reserve analysis. Are you going to be able to show us what that reserve requirement looks like for the next 5-year period? I understand what we're doing as through the whole analysis, but is there a way to get a window on what our most immediate needs are going to be?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what we're spending our time on right now.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on the report? Marty, you okay?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Amelia, roll us back to the front here. Okay, whistleblower policy. Tom?
Okay, this one I'm going to give to Paula, and this is a direct action taken based upon the audit that we received at the last board meeting. So the auditor said, this is something we need to publicize. Mm-hmm. Currently our whistleblower policy is posted all over the place in all of our buildings on a big sheet of paper you get from the Department of Fair Employment and I think DFEH Housing.
Correct.
And DFEH and OSHA, they all require us to publish that we have a whistleblower policy. Well, Ingrid felt we should actually have one as a district policy. So I asked Paula to work with Ingrid and to do her own thing and put this together. So here, yes. I'm going to turn it over to Paula.
So Tom really didn't leave me much to talk about other than that this is based on our fiscal year 1920 audit finding. We do have a whistleblower piece in the board of directors policy that speaks to whistleblower activities and the protections that are given, but we don't really have anything that speaks to that in our specific policies regarding the Whistleblower Act and the protections that it provides. So this is just making that, solidifying this for our policies and meeting the audit finding requirement.
I read it. I'm fine with it. Marty, are you?
Yeah, I had two questions. One on the second paragraph, the end of the second sentence, it says, dishonest to one or more parties specified in the policy. Who are those? I can't find what the parties are.
So,
where are you at?
Let's see.
Second paragraph, end of second sentence.
Okay.
Parties.
So it says down at the bottom, the employee is to contact his or her immediate supervisor or the director of administration.
No, it says a dishonest to one or more of the parties. Who are those parties?
So if you look at the third paragraph down below, it says an employee has knowledge of or a concern of illegal or dishonest fraudulent activity, the employee is to contact his or her immediate supervisor or the director of administration. Those are the parties identified.
Is that answering your question, Marty?
It just confused me. The second question was, did this go by the legal guys?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great.
So the short answer is, if you see something dishonest, you first person you contact is your supervisor, right?
Correct.
Is that always, and I know structurally we're not set up exactly this way, but in most cases you would have an option of contacting HR as opposed to your supervisor, specifically if you thought your supervisor was the one that was stealing the money?
Correct. If you would absolutely go to, I think that's why it states the director of administration.
So it gives you the director of administration. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Would it be preferable in that sentence? Let me see. It's down where it says policy, and then it's like the third paragraph below policy there. There you go, right there. Is it better perhaps to indicate that that is a choice that you have, as opposed to making it less clear that it, you know, it sounds like maybe you go to your supervisor and then you go to the director of administration. Is it preferable that they understand they could go to either on the first pass?
Sure, we can absolutely add that word in there to make it clearer that there's a choice.
Yeah, okay. That would be my only comment. Any more on that? Marty, you okay?
Okay.
So I guess you bring that with that change, you bring that to the board for with our recommendation that we approve it, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We're good. Okay, Amelia, do your thing here.
The next thing that we're going to talk about is item number 5.
This is the one I sent you a copy of, just the
here.
Yeah, this is the item 5 is the discuss the security town hall meeting agenda. I believe at this point, Marty and I both have a copy of the first pass of that. So Tom, whatever you want to comment on here is.
Okay. Well, again, this is a finance committee item. So we have to make sure the finance committee is fully aware. It's an informational item for security. So here we are with the timeline. We're definitely digging in. June 22nd is the date. We're going to start working on getting the word out. I'm going to talk to Kevin at the RMA and talk about maybe putting it on his message board. We can send it over to the Raleys, get it put on their message board and put signs up and put it on our webpage and stuff. So hopefully everybody who wants to attend the meeting knows about it and can be there. And then we're trying to get ahead of the agenda here because it's going to be really critical that we make it very clean and give people really solid items to talk about. So after we go through introductions, we're going to have a clear expectation or clear identification of what the town hall objective is. And then we're going to talk about, as you can see, where we are now and how we got here. Talk about Measure J, the history of the rates. We'll throw some charts in there. We'll talk about the administrative cost allocation plan that was produced last year, which sort of daylighted the fact that the security department was a pretty heavy drain on the overall budget for the district, whereby it's we're allocated about 60% of property taxes, 55-60% of property taxes. And then we'll talk about the security budget and sort of a very clean few lines detail to really so somebody who's not looking at these numbers all the time can understand it. And then we're going to roll out three options that, you know, based upon input from Tina and other staff in security, what options are out there, plus the financial aspect of that. And then talk about if we do go, you know, we are going to do the opinion poll that does have a timeline and explain that to everybody. And then open it up for questions. Our preference is going to be to get through the first 5 bullets or get it down to where we explain about the timeline and then take questions. You guys probably have a better experience than I do, since I have none, as to how town hall meetings work out here at Rancho Marietta. Is it a pretty amenable crowd that'll let us get through our presentation and then calmly ask questions, or will there be a lot of interruptions as we try to explain through the PowerPoint? So that's my statement, and I'm interested in your comments.
Well, I can, from the experience that I had when we did the meeting, we didn't call it, I don't believe, a town hall, but we did a general meeting at the country club when we did the security study. And it was an orderly meeting, and I don't anticipate this would be any different. I would anticipate that you will have a lot of questions and they will be diving into the weeds. And part of the problem usually is trying to get constructive questions answered and avoid the, for example, well, my sister-in-law came to the gate and she's on my list and she couldn't get in, you know. I don't know if there's anything we can do up front to try and guide that so that we get into the real meat of this. The other question I had in looking at the first draft is there were a couple of things that we had talked about as part of this, and I guess maybe they're part of the opinion poll, but I don't know how they get integrated. One is the opportunity to supplement all or part or none of our security with support from the off-duty Sacramento sheriffs. I know we do that now, but understanding if that is something that the community wants or doesn't want. And the other part was having a discussion about the somehow restructuring the commercial aspect of security so that it's more consistent with their needs. I mean, I think part of our problem here is that we have security really with two sets of demands. One is residential and one is commercial. And we talked about a way of making that more efficient, making the coverage better. And I don't know how that fits into this. So those were my questions.
Well, I think to answer your latter question, I mean, we just kind of put our foot on Measure J on a pretty regular basis. And in general, when you have a security program, you direct your assets to where the need is. And as the commercial gets busier, I think our patrol officers are spending more time over there. And no better example than Sac Sheriff, who puts all their resources in other parts of the county rather than Rancho Marietta. And, you know, it's up to us to call them and have them come out, or we have to hire them to help supplement our stuff. But it's worthy of adding maybe a bullet to talk about the commercial and is there a way to redefine how we provide the security to commercial to stay within the Measure J requirements?
Yeah, one of the things that I was interested in exploring was that everything we support with the patrol service we have available to us as a result of Measure J, and now with what we supplement it with from property taxes, every task that we perform in some way, shape, or form as it relates to patrol takes away from our ability to patrol both the residential area and the undeveloped property. And my idea was that if we could self-contain in some way the commercial aspect, so that it did the same thing all the time and it did it on a schedule that was more suited to the way that they operate, you know, retail and commercial, then perhaps we would not get tangled up with the growth in commercial, and we would subsequently not start eating into our ability to patrol both the residential and the undeveloped property. So that's kind of where I was going with that. It's not that I have some overwhelming preference for anything, but I think there may be a better way in there to serve both masters, so to speak, without taking away from one to supplement the other.
Okay, we'll add it. We'll add. Make sure we discuss that in the agenda.
And I would like to, if we're going to have a town hall, as far as support from off-duty sheriffs, I would like to see that in some way get aired out, so that we understood, or began to understand how many people would support that and how many people would not. I mean, there are people who would be, I'm sure, somewhat against, you know, off-duty sheriffs hiding behind stop signs. And there would be some people who think that we ought to, you know, staff it completely that way. Then, and that was my only objective there, was to get it in there somehow so that we would understand from the community what it was that they wanted.
Well, John, is it your thought that if as you're looking at the screen here, where we talk about options for the future, is it your thought that, you know, what we're gonna do, to be perfectly honest, was to provide a scenario under options for the future on if we have to totally live within our means, how much security will be provided? If we wanna continue to do what we're doing today, which includes right now supplementing with sheriff's officers, and that's mostly due to we just don't have patrol officers because they're hard to hire. We could talk about that, and we could also in that section talk about you know, what we think people want with the addition of patrol staffing, or maybe additional gate staffing. And then we could talk about, do we really want to have the sheriffs here, and do we want to restructure how we provide security for the commercial area, or in general south of the highway? What you're thinking?
Yeah, and that's pretty much encompasses what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking it without advocating for anything. I personally, I want to understand what it is that the community wants from us, and I also want to understand, so they understand, how much it would cost to provide any of these different scenarios. You know, so if we introduce that in some way so that it's kind of on the table when those folks do the opinion poll, maybe we would get the kind of feedback we needed to move forward and have them through the opinion poll actually kind of tell us what they want us to do. I mean, I understand completely, and I agree with making the statement that if we do nothing, this is what it's going to look like. And if we don't do any restructuring, and we increase the rates by X, this is what it's going to look like. Or if we do some restructuring, it's going to cost more, and this is what that's going to look like. That's kind of what I don't know if that's clear or not, but that's kind of what I'm trying to get to.
Okay.
I see this town hall meeting is getting us some input that helps drive the second objective, is to have stakeholder meetings, and then finally an opinion poll. There's got to be some way that people who attend this town hall meeting or watch it on TV, if it's televised, how they could provide input to the later stages.
Marty, I'd like to answer your question.
Yeah.
First of all, we have no intent of televising it.
Okay.
It's an in-person meeting. It's allowed unless the governor pulls back his Open California statement. But it's going to be an in-person meeting, and then we're relying heavily on our consultant, True North Consulting, to advise us on the next step, but there was a high demand for making it everybody and anybody who wanted to be included in the process, which is why we felt the town hall meeting was a good way to open this process. But the stakeholder groups are going to be groups of like 8 or 10 people, and there'll be like 4 or 5 groups. And each group will be a mixture of different locations within the district. It'll have maybe somebody from a commercial, the village, and you know, maybe the gardens, as well as members of the south and the north neighborhoods in each of the working groups. So to answer the cry for being able to have inclusion in the process, we created the town hall meeting, which can be a lot of people, and give everybody an opportunity to see where we're going. And then how the stakeholder groups are being built, I don't have that answer right now. It's high on our list of figuring out.
That wasn't my question. My question is, what is the method that the people who attend the town hall meeting to propose a solution to the next group, how are they going to do that? Just by voicing up at the meeting, or are they going to be able to do it later by email, or how are they going to do it? Because there are some solutions that you haven't thought of, and I haven't thought of, and John hasn't thought of, that we don't even know about right now. So somehow, how do they get their solutions out to the decision makers?
We have not made that decision yet. It's a discussion we're having, as we fine tune this presentation. Part of the thought is to have people apply. I guess a lot of form, and then we randomly select them to be.
That's not my question. There's two groups that are going to have input. One's the town hall, and one's the stakeholders meeting. The town hall people who only go to the town hall, how do they? What's their method of proposing a solution? How do they do it? Just by speaking up at the meeting, or do they send an email later, or what do they do?
I think the answer to both those questions is yes. I think that's a good idea. We can create an email address for follow-up questions or ideas.
Yeah, because there got to be, maybe some people don't want to speak up at the meeting, but later they come up with an idea and they say, this is what I'd like, and consider it. There just got to be a process so they know what they're supposed to do, rather than walking away from the meeting and be done with it.
Okay. Now, I like the idea of people being able to email in suggestions or questions. Mm-hmm. Then we'll create a special email account just for that purpose.
Lastly, I gave you some responses to your questions.
And yes.
Are you going to follow up on that, or what's the next step?
I'm going to follow up with you directly, and I'll let you know what we did with your questions or suggestions, and then hopefully that meets your needs.
Sounds good.
Tom, are there, and I don't know, and I don't want to imply that we, being the CSD, would be suggesting anything, but are there 3 broad concepts that could be illustrated to start a conversation with the community? For example, we know what scenario number one is. That's, we do nothing. We know what scenario number two is that we increase the security tax to cover an existing operation, which is different than the first thing I said, because if we don't get anything, we wind up probably cutting service. And maybe number three, maybe there's 4, maybe number 3 is an expansion of service using existing staff. And maybe number 4 is adding bells and whistles like sheriff support or blah, 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 where people could say or see these in some concise way and see what the overall options are. And I don't think in the start that we would have to put costs directly into it, like this one's going to cost you $27 more or anything like that. But unless there's, I'm just thinking that unless there's some way they can see these alternatives, I don't know how you, like Marty said, well, you know, I want them to have input on what it ought to look like. But without some guidance, maybe that goes all over the lot and we can't make any sense out of it. I don't have an answer here. I'm just wondering if there's something more we could do here to make this more concise or easier, whatever.
Well, I think by the time this is finalized, where you look at the options for the future, your statement, we do nothing. It's what we've had Michelle working on is as we look at what if we decide we're not going to spend any more property taxes on security, what does that look like? Well, what it looks like is reduced patrol hours, pretty significant right. reduction in patrol hours. And then what if we just continue to do what we're doing now, which is provide the bare minimum of what Measure J mandates. And I think until further notice, we are going to have a component of sheriff to supplement us or an influx of something to help support, you know, the staff that we have, our full-time staff. And then internally, we kind of talked amongst ourselves about what would be that next level. And that next level might contain a component that is directly related to commercial, or it could contain a component where there's increased attention behind the gates, where the highest number of, you know, highest dollars will come from. And what we're trying to do is kind of allow people to put their foot on something and say, you know what, I don't like this, but I could like it if you did these two things. And so we're just trying to give a model for people to look at on the screen and discuss. The other thing is for budgeting purposes, we need some definitive structure. We need to know, are we going to increase, let's just say, patrol staff by 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, and pick your days? Or are we just going to double patrol and always have a patrol officer in the north and one in the south, and then more in the commercial area on south of the freeway, the highway? So we're going to create scenarios that people can look at when they raise their hand and they want to say something. Eventually, we would like to get into a definitive position like A or B, and that would supposedly go find their way into the questions that are going to be developed by the stakeholder groups. The questions, again, will come back. Amelia, do you mind scrolling up a tiny bit so we can see 2, 3, and 4? Or maybe it's just my resolution. So we're going to come back after the town hall meeting in July, create the work groups. And so when you guys, when we have probably August, we'll bring, I should have put something in there for August for the committee, for the finance committee. We take the questions to the board in August and then turn those over in concert. We're working with our polling person, True North, that generates the questions that become the survey. And then they do the survey and they come back with an answer of, if you do this, this is the number of voters that we think we're going to vote yes or no. And that's when you make a decision.
Well, if I was hearing you correctly at the beginning of what you've just been saying, you're kind of telling me that you are going to create these scenarios. In other words, they're going to understand, and I don't, you know, I'm using 4 as a number. It doesn't have to be 4, but you know, the different conditions as they relate to cost. In other words, do nothing, raise the tax to do away with the property tax allocation, and enhance it somehow, understanding that you're going to pay more. You know, I was just trying to make that clear that I think it's important to do it that way. Otherwise, you're just going to get random comments. And you know, my experience is, like I told you before, well, you know, Aunt Sally showed up at the gate and, you know, she wasn't on my list. You know, so we're gonna see this. We're gonna see this again before the town hall. We are, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. To be clear, I can provide it to either one of you individually. I can't provide it to you together unless we're in a public meeting.
Right.
So that's why I provided each of you a draft of this, and you give me your comments, and I don't share your comments with each other. And that allows us to stay within the rules of the Brown Act. But yeah, you will see further iterations of this. And probably, you know, the night before the town hall meeting or a couple days before the town hall meeting, we'll release something. I don't know what that something is today, but we'll release something to kind of generate an appetite for open discussion. And it will include, I believe, some of the scenarios whereby bare minimum all the way to optimum, you know, the max. And somewhere in the middle is where we're going to have to settle, because at some point, you know, you got to go back to the voters and decide, do they want to increase their property tax? I mean, not their property tax, their special tax, their Measure J. And it might just, the referendum might just be, we want to revise Measure J to include these items. So either they get increased or included, or it just remains the same. So, and that's, we have to have that conversation with our attorney, Dick Shanahan, because he has experience with, you know, watching special districts take things forward to the voters.
Right. And the only other part, again, that relates back to the commercial is, you know, I think there, when Michelle and I were looking at those numbers initially, they were 10% of the tax. And I don't know through the stakeholder process if including one of them in various groups makes as much sense as having a collective commercial stakeholder meeting to see if through that you don't come up with a more effective, efficient, and cost effective way to run that part of the business. I mean, they essentially don't get a vote in this. They, you know, they get one. So they're gonna wind up with whatever we decide they're gonna wind up with. But I'd really like to take, like I said, I want to take a look at that, because I think in the end it eats away from the 90% of what we're responsible for as we apply more and more effort into the commercial entity as it grows. I mean, we got a shopping center down there that's only, you know, beginning to get full with, you know, teenage attractions that are going to make it more and more problematic. And if we're spending 2 hours over there on every time we get a shoplifting call, you know, that's the kind of thing I want to understand, is how much does that detract from the 90% of our function, which is inside the gate?
Okay.
All right.
Your comments are very well noted. And we had originally thought that the stakeholder groups would be one stakeholder group for a commercial, one for the Village and the Gardens, one for the South and one for the North. And the consultant who does this for a living is, he's the one who recommended that we do a mixture in each of the stakeholder groups to provide a better message, and not a one-sided message from each of the types of neighborhoods that we have. But I understand your comments about the commercial, and let us think about that for a week or so and come up with an idea.
Yeah, I just want to make it clear, I have no preference. I mean, I'm just trying to get I'm trying to maximize the information we glean from this. And I agree with him that I would, you know, I think it would be great if you're going to talk about the 90% that you're essentially talking, you know, you're having groups that are represented by the 90%. And I think he's right that having a gardens person and a village person and a north person and a south person in the same meeting is meaningful. I don't know that commercial fits that exactly, but you know, I'm open to whatever they want to do.
Okay.
Any more on this?
Yes, I do have, if I may, a question.
Sure.
From Gail Bullen. What is the town hall objective? Gail, do you feel as if that's been answered for you? Would you like some more clarification on that?
I guess I'd like a paraphrase or a summary because I've heard a whole bunch of discussion, but I'd rather hear Tom summarize what he's getting at than me figuring it out from all the comments.
Well, let me give it a shot, unless you want to, John.
No, go ahead.
So the town hall meeting was imagined based upon quite a few comments from the public about wanting to be included in the process. And the polling company they do their work scientifically and they're generally real successful on predicting whether or not elections are gonna go the way they think they're gonna go. And they are very clear that the stakeholder groups to help create the questions are useful, but they have to be manageable. And so it turned out that only 40, maybe 50 people can be divided up amongst those stakeholder groups, which then left a whole bunch of people feeling like they weren't part of the process. So the town hall objective was to become more inclusive and in an open forum to let anybody who has a say have an opportunity to speak out loud and be heard, and their ideas to be brought forward to the stakeholder groups. And adding an email address for people to send in ideas, I think it's a really good idea as well. So does that help answer your question, Gail?
Yes, it really does, Tom, thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.
Anything further here?
I have no more questions.
Okay, get us back up to the top again. Where are we?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
John, this is John. In order for there to be compliance with 218, there has to be an engineer's report to do a special tax. So my question would be, when would that take place in this process as you see it?
That's a good question. I don't know if you would introduce that. Well, it would certainly have to be available before and presented before you went to a vote. It would probably have to be part of the informational packet that was available prior to the, whatever you want to call it, roadshow that would have to take place before there was an actual vote.
Amelia,
I don't know if there is. I'm sure it is. There's probably something written that specifies that. So maybe we ought to look it up and find out.
And then scroll down a little bit. So the plan is potential referendum marketing campaign between March and June. My guess is between what we recommend to the board in November and when we go out with our marketing campaign, and not marketing, or that's the wrong term, isn't it, Amelia? I messed up. It's sort of an informational campaign for the voters. And if that's a requirement, John, then that's when we'll do it.
So, Tom, and this is, you know, my research on Prop 218, that the district, even though Prop 218 existed when they went to Measure J, they did not comply. And if you're going to go out for a special tax, you have to have an engineer's report. You can't have the service be whatever you believe you want it to be. It has to be commensurate with the proportional cost of providing the service, just like any other district service. That tax has to be proportional to the service that's provided. In this particular case, I believe it's to the property. So you've got to know those numbers before you formulate your tax. You can't formulate your tax and then have an engineer's report that parallels it, because that's what you did last time without. They didn't have an engineer's report. They used the district's data, which was not allowed, or theoretically not allowed. So now you have the same situation coming up if you don't do an engineer's report. And let me just give you the most egregious example is on the undeveloped property that you tax per acre inside the gate. The analysis that was done prior to the tax being imposed said that there was 8% of the district's cost for providing security services for the undeveloped property. And the district logs subsequent to and demonstrated for the last umpteen years is it's less than 2%. So you have a situation where you're not compliant with Prop 218, and you should not have been raising rates on the undeveloped properties once you recognize that it isn't costing you that percentage. The tax is a max tax of 2%, but you're supposed to analyze every category every year. That's what the whole process is all about. Is you're supposed to look at the tax every year as a proportion of what it costs you to provide the service. And if it's not costing you what you're charging, you shouldn't raise the rate. So I'm just saying the engineer's report is what's supposed to be the basis for reasonable rate setting.
I think, thank John, you. There's a difference, and I'll research this. I think I've done this already. There's a difference between a special tax and a Prop 218 levy of costs to the ratepayers. They're two different
variables,
and I believe back in the day.
Sorry. Dick Shanahan will shoot that down in about a minute.
Okay. Well, we've heard your comments.
Let's as part of the process, let's go back to Shanahan, make sure we understand what parameters we're living with here. This in itself will be somewhat different, you know, than an analysis of, you know, 150 feet of sewer pipe. In that, as I understand it, we are still the only district on the planet that provides this service. So I don't think there is a lot of experience from a 218 standpoint to go by in how we develop this. I mean, there may be a set of rules that we have to fit inside, but I don't see right off the top where this is going to be an easy task. But you know, let's make sure we understand what it is we need to do and start taking the steps to do it.
I'll do that. I know I've asked this question before. I'll ask it again, so we'll have a more current answer available.
All right. Any other hands, Amelia?
No.
So we are back up to director and staff comments. Tom, Paula, anything?
I'm good.
I don't have anything else.
Marty, anything?
I have just one question with regard to our meeting on the 3rd. I know we're talking reserve study stuff, but will we have a current budget to go with that?
We were not planning on producing a budget report for the reserve study, the reserve special board meeting.
Okay, so when's the next time we'll see it?
Are you talking about the proposed budget for next fiscal year?
Yes. I thought they were interrelated somehow.
But they're related. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought they were interrelated and one affects the other, so it'd be nice to see them together.
Well, won't we have, after we have this reserve analysis presented, we'll have, I'm asking, I don't know. We'll have another finance meeting before we have the board meeting at which we get one final pass at the budget, correct?
Okay, let me answer that. The point of discussion, which is why we're having the reserve special board meeting, is to talk about the amount of money we've increased reserve contributions from the ratepayers each month going into next fiscal year. And the reason we raise the fees so much is kind of twofold, but it's primarily that we're not reserving enough funds to keep up with our aging infrastructure. And we're trying to put together a summary of the aging infrastructure and over the next few years, it's a 30-year spreadsheet, but you kind of focus on the next 5 and you're constantly looking at it every time you do the budget. But to show us how much we need to do the reserve projects, we need to do today and next fiscal year, which is why we raised the suggested amount of contribution to reserves for water and sewer. The other side of the coin is, because we're spending property taxes, so much of our property tax money on security, we're not having available retained revenues at the end of each year to go towards the reserve accounts. So the goal of the reserve meeting is to focus on reserves entirely and then how that relates to the bulk of the increase, the bulk of the discretionary increase in next year's proposed budget. So we can have in there the budget line items that call out the increase in reserves. But really what it is, going to be an exercise to give you guys a look at how much money are in the correct reserve accounts and how that relates to an increase this year and possibly an increase in future years in a more prescribed fashion. We're trying to get our hands around all the infrastructure projects that cost a lot of money and trying to figure out the best time it will be to execute those. Up to this point, we have not utilized the reserve study on an annual basis to decide what projects are going to go forward next year. We've kind of been what the bright shiny objects are or what we really think is going to break this year. And we want to get into more of a prescriptive nature so the reserve contributions can be charted out into the future years and not just all of a sudden a big chunk. I'm sorry, sometimes I ramble.
Well, no, I get that. And it's Marty's question. I'll let him have the last shot at it. But I get that. I was just, but we do, I mean, will be coming into the next finance meeting essentially with information we don't have now. I mean, we've developed a budget to this point with information we don't have now. So, you know, it may be a time, and like Marty said, one does impact the other. So whatever it is we decide to do, we can do, but we're going to get one more shot at it.
And if you guys want to have, if you come out of the meeting Thursday and you want to have another finance committee meeting, we can do that.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Marty, what do you think?
My thought was that when we're discussing reserves and we decide on what path we're going to use to go forward, that we should at least be able to have a budget next to it that shows the implication of our decision. Even if, I don't know how, what status, have you changed it at all since the last time we saw
it? The large budget or the CIP budget?
The large budget?
No, we haven't changed it at all. Hmm. We removed a position in water and sewer. We had talked about having a compliance and inspection officer. And then we later came up with a better solution because we don't think we're going to hire anybody to fill that position. So we removed that cost from the budget, which lowered the budget about $6 per month, $5 and like 73 cents a month cheaper.
Okay.
Well, at any rate, let's take them one at a time here. Let's see what comes out of this Thursday meeting. And if we feel like we need to have more discussion as it relates to either the reserves or the budget or to both, then we can plan to do that. That's fine with me. If we need to have another meeting, we'll have another meeting.
Okay.
Marty, anything else?
No, I'm done.
Anybody, anything?
No comments, no chats.
Okay, thank you, Amelia. And we'll see y'all on Thursday.
We are adjourned.
Adios.